The overwhelming number of new writers who come to me and say, like, oh, I'm starting a book or I'm working on my first book. Overwhelmingly, the problem they have is that they just work on their first book forever. I think that is the number one pitfall of a new writer. Like, you talk to a lot of authors and they'll say, oh, it took me 5 years to write my first book, and now I write a book in like 90 days or 6 months or whatever, because just learning how to finish something is a skill all its own.
Hey everyone, welcome to How Success Happens. I'm Dan Bova, writer and editor at entrepreneur.com. So we're in the midst of summer reading season. And if you like a little romance mixed with swords and dark magic and bloody beheadings, then you are probably very familiar with today's guest. Carissa Broadbent is the number one New York Times and USA Today bestselling author of the Crowns of Nyaxia series, which is a powerhouse among the powerhouse that is the romanticy category in fiction. And her new book, The Lion and the Deathless Dark, is out August 4th, and she is here now. So welcome, Carissa.
Thank you so much for having me. Also, what a fabulous introduction. I might like take you around to all of my events so that you can hype me up. We just need to get some good walkout music to put behind that, and we would be rolling.
Hey, yeah, I could do it. We could do it. Shoot some t-shirts into the crowd. You know, we'll work on it. We'll workshop it. But great to meet you and talk to you. I want to start by asking, you've written a tremendous amount of literally tremendous books in the last few years. So I'm wondering, how's the carpal tunnel going?
I'm real tired. I'm also, at time of speaking, 8 months pregnant. So I am extra real tired at this particular moment in time.
Congratulations. Wow, that's fantastic.
Thank you. So if I'm a little out of breath, that's why. It's because all of my organs are just kind of being pushed around a little bit.
Got it. Well, tell that fetus to settle down. We're on a national podcast right now, okay?
I know. We've got to start the media training very early with this one.
Excellent. Well, I want to get into the media of it all and your productivity tips and all that kind of stuff. But first, I was thinking, for people who are unfamiliar with romanticy, because we hear this word a lot, can you break the genre down a little bit? Because I read the first 100 pages of this. I'm not going to say anything about the plot, but I think I had romanticy all wrong. So can you explain what it is?
Absolutely. Also, I'm so curious to know what your perception was at first. Every time I say romanticy, I feel the need to do jazz hands because it's become such a buzzword, you know, in the literary space right now. And I started in indie publishing, where I'm sure we'll get into that later, but where a lot of romanticy kind of grew out of independent publishing. And when the term didn't exist, there was a lot of fighting about whether it was like romantic fantasy or fantasy romance. And I thought it was just like the most asinine argument in the world. So when romanticy started becoming a thing, I was like, great, we've got a word that we can encompass all the things. So my definition is actually a bit broader than some people's. To me, romanticy is basically a genre that just encompasses some degree of romance, some degree of fantasy. And there are books that are kind of what I'll say capital R romance, right? Like that are kind of more romance forward. And then there is romanticy that is also capital F fantasy, which is kind of more fantasy forward. To me, both of those things are romanticy. It's just that the genre encompasses stories that where both the epic fantasy element and the romance element are kind of integral to the story and can't be extracted. And really, to me, the marker of a romanticy book is whether a reader, you know, if you were to ask a reader, what did you like about this book? Like, what are the things that are going to stick with them? If they're talking about that romance as a really pivotal element of it, to me, that totally counts as romanticy.
Great. Well, yeah, because as you said, it's this word that's everywhere. And if you read anything about like publishing industry, it's like number one, it is the thing. Publishers are racing to find the next big romantasy author. And luckily, yours found you because you've done pretty well for yourself. A lot of people want to write books. And then a smaller amount of them actually get to type the word the end. And then an even smaller amount get published. And then even a smaller amount get to count their readership in the millions. So I'd love to hear about you. You started to mention your beginnings as an independent writer. How did this whole thing get started?
So I love that, you know, I'm on an entrepreneurship focused chat right now, because I have always been very interested in entrepreneurship. And that's actually part of a big part of why my publishing journey went the way that it did. I wrote a lot as like a child and as a teenager, and then I've kind of stopped as college and got crazy and everything. Then I got out of college. I got into my first big girl job in marketing. And I had this moment that I think a lot of like 22-year-olds have once they get into like their first kind of routine job, where I was like, oh no, this is it forever and ever. and then I was like, I should write a book. And I had always been very interested in entrepreneurship. And that was why I was really drawn to independent publishing. So for folks who don't know the difference between the two, there are kind of two main pathways to publishing a book today. One is traditional publishing, which is like, you know, the books that you go into Barnes & Noble and you see on the shelves are like 99% traditionally published. That's like when you go through all of the traditional publishing infrastructure, you get like an agent and a publisher, and you go in like the big machine and you have your book out there in the world. And then the other avenue is indie publishing or self-publishing, which is what I did, which is when you use things like, you know, Amazon Kindle Direct Publishing or all of these different methods that exist now to kind of do what it says on the bottle and self-publish your book. The downside of that being that you're responsible for, you know, your editing process and cover design and marketing. Like, you really have to wear all of the hats. But that was always part of the appeal to me, especially because I worked in marketing. I majored in graphic design. So I was kind of like, yeah, if anyone's well-equipped to do it, yeah, I figure I'm in a pretty good position.
You put the first book out into the world. You know, do you remember like how many people read it? How many people knew it existed? How did you let people know it existed? That's a big problem for people who are self-publishing.
Yeah, of course. It's very much a living process. My first book, like I said, was quite bad. I did publish it. You cannot get it anymore. I often am asked, I actually self-published three books that are no longer available.
Wow.
And they're all varying degrees of bad. And I'm very frequently asked about them. And I say, like, honey, you're not missing out on anything here. So it was a living process. And I think that first book, I mean, it was like probably 25 people read that thing. There was one time I was at an event and someone brought me a copy. And that was like a real small world moment, because I was like, I think there were very literally like 30 copies ever printed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that's amazing.
There was a lot of learning on my feet.
Well, you've since written quite a few wonderful books that sold more than 30 copies, a little bit more than 30 copies. And I'm wondering, can you talk a little bit about that process? Because these are very intricate worlds that you've built. How do you immerse yourself in a project like this without just like burning out within weeks? Because, I mean, it's take a long time to do, right?
Yeah, that was also a living process as well. Like, I feel, you probably hear this from a lot of guests, actually. I feel very strongly that, okay, so learning to write a book is a skill, right? So just like anything, like learning to paint or learning to code or whatever, it's a skill that it's a muscle that you have to learn and build and actively try to improve upon. But then also, like, the actual act of finishing something, the act of learning how to be more productive in a way that's sustainable to you, is also a skill. That it's like almost separate from the actual creative part, right? Like you have like the creative part of the book thing, and then you have the part of like actually being a functional, you know, professional in this space. So I had a very intensive day job, you know, while I was writing quite a few books. And I did completely burn myself out at first, you know, because I was trying to build a system that would work for me. And eventually I realized that I had to build a system for the version of Carissa that actually exists today, not like this imaginary version of Carissa that's totally going to exist tomorrow, that same version of Carissa that's going to go to the gym every day and like eat nothing but spinach and like, you know, like, like people do that though. They make plans for like this imaginary perfect version of themselves. So like, for example, I worked with a lot of people on the West Coast. I knew I would always end up, my work days would always like bleed late. So I realized if I was going to finish a book, I needed to have time carved out every day. And it had to be like reasonable time. Like I was not going to be working on this book at 9 o'clock at night. So instead I got up at 4 o'clock in the morning and I did it. Yeah, I know. I'm much more tired now. This wouldn't have, I don't know how anyone who has a day job and children like managed to do this. Godspeed to all of you. But, and it was just carving out like an hour every day. You know, 1,000 words 100 times is a book. That's what I tell anyone who says, oh, I want to write a book, but it's so intimidating. Mm. Well, you just do it, you know?
Yeah. How did you make the leap into the sort of mainstream publishing? And then I'd love to talk about how you developed this audience, because you obviously have millions of devoted fans. But let's start with getting into mainstream publishing.
Totally. Those two questions are actually kind of intertwined. I feel very passionate about self-publishing. I think it's a very viable solution for authors. I feel like it's gotten a lot of the stigma around it has decreased from when I first kind of got into the scene around like 2016-ish is probably when I started being interested in it and learning about it and stuff. And at that time, there was still like this really significant stigma around self-publishing and about how you kind of weren't a real author if you were self-published. But I always felt like, you know, my goal was to make a living as a creative. And I was very practical that I felt like I was never going to be a bestseller, which, surprise, I never expected to be a bestseller. And I was thinking, like, what is the way that I can, as a mid-list author, meaning like an author, you know, no one's going to recognize your name, you know, on the street or whatever, but like you have like a steady readership. I felt like independent publishing just had the math worked out better, you know, for the possibility of having kind of a sustainable, like middle-class income, you know, doing it. So I was perfectly happy, you know, continuing in self-publishing. And a lot of people congratulate me on my book, The Serpent and the Wings of Night, the first book in the Crowns of Nyxia series, which is the one that went like really viral. And that was the first time that I did start to get interest from traditional publishers. But I was actually a full-time author before that book came out and was doing, you know, pretty well for myself. Like I did achieve that kind of sustainable middle-class income, you know, doing it. So when I had that big viral book, that was when I started getting interest from traditional publishers. And I'm very fortunate that I was in a position where I was very happy with independent publishing. So I didn't feel like, oh, I need to leap at a deal. You know, like I really want a deal that's going to work very well for me and for what my goals are in my career. And I'm very fortunate that I ended up in a great publisher partnership based on that.
That's great. Was there any part of you that was like, screw you guys, I did this my way, I don't need you, period?
I mean, in a way, like, okay, I love my partnership with my publisher, right? That's what enables me to like, you know, you guys, that's how I get to be on this podcast, you know, that's how I get to do events, that's why my books are in Barnes & Noble. There are a lot of distribution avenues that are just, for logistical reasons, completely unavailable to indie authors, no matter how popular they are.
Okay, got it. Yeah.
just because of the way, like the way numbers work, you know, distribution and warehousing and printing and all that stuff. So I am very, very happy with my partnership with my publisher, but I always remind authors, especially independent authors who are starting to get interest, you know, from publishers, like, don't feel like, you know, it needs to be a Cinderella story where somebody is going to, you know, this publisher is going to come in and like change your life, you know, or change your career. Like, you built a career. They are coming to you because you have something and they recognize the value in that. And the biggest mistake that I see some independent authors make, because there is definitely a feeling of, it's flattering, you know, you're very excited. But you need to recognize from a business perspective the value of what you've built and make sure you're not accidentally making business decisions contrary to that because you're so rightfully excited.
Did you have any anybody advising you at that time who gave you any like kind of key things to look out for, you know, with your contract or how, you know, how it all works?
Oh yeah, I had an agent at that time. So again, I did things kind of backwards because I was self-published. So typically, if an author writes a book and you want to get it published, you go and you try to find an agent first. Like, that's your first step with your unpublished manuscript. I obviously did not do that because I was self-publishing. So my my method was more that I started to get publisher interest, and then I sent a bunch of emails to agents being like, help, help, what do? I need help.
Right.
And I am very fortunate that I found a fantastic agent, and a particularly fantastic agent for my situation, because she and the rest of her agency worked with a lot of like hybrid authors like myself. And as a result, they weren't, they're very good at advising when something is an actual benefit, you know. They're not just trying to like to integrate me fully into the traditional publishing system, you know?
Yeah. 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 That's great. That's awesome. So I'd love to talk to you a little bit more about, cause I know you're big on big talk, book talk, and you, you know, as you said, you have this viral sensation of a book. Like, how did you reach that initial audience? What did you do that you think was instrumental in getting so many people's attention?
This is a hard question to answer sometimes. There are two things that stick out. One is kind of more woo-woo creative than the other. One is more tactical. So the first thing, and I think that this was pretty instrumental to a change in my career. So I mentioned how I wrote three books that are no longer available because they're varying degrees of not so great. And then I wrote my book, Daughter of No Worlds, which also did not sell very well at first, but it gained a very slow word of mouth, organic readership, like a very steady, you know, growth in readership over the years. And that was the series that ultimately allowed me to quit my job. And when I was working on that book, I read something by another author, Susan Dennard, who wrote like this, these really wonderful blog posts about craft and revisions and things like that. And she had said when she's revising, she writes like her ultimate fan letter to herself. Meaning, if someone were to read this book and they were to take everything away from it that you want them to, and then wrote you like a fan letter or like the best review you could ever hope to get, what would they say? And it's not about like hyping yourself up, but it's more about understanding your audience and what they actually should get from the book, like in very specific terms. And it feels like a no-brainer, but when you actually sit to write it down, you realize that you come up with things that you weren't thinking about before. So this became an integral part of my process. Like, I don't do it in letter form anymore. I just do a bullet list of like, okay, what do I want people to remember about this book in 1 year? You know, like, what are the things that I want someone to be like, wow, this like spoke to me, you know? And that's a matter of understanding your reader.
That's brilliant. And I mean, so many parallels to people talking about building their businesses, you know, thinking about what does the customer want? What was my ideal customer? I'm not trying to, make something that everyone in the world likes. I want something that these people are going to really love. And it sounds like that's the process you've got.
That's exactly what it is. And I was working in marketing at the time. So actually,
yeah,
probably, I never put this together in that way, but probably when I read that, I made exactly the same connection that you just did, that it's about, okay, understanding who is the story for and why are they going to love it in like a very genuine way, you know?
Right, right.
And like, it's not like this soulless marketing thing, because to me, that's also a craft thing, you know, like the best book that you can produce is something that someone is going to be very impacted by. And the more you can understand how you're going to do that, the better you're going to do at actually accomplishing it.
Yeah.
So that was a turning point, I think.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So talk to me about the difference of your writing. You know, you've got a day job, you're writing kind of for fun or because it's your passion, you just love doing it. But now this is your thing. And when it's your thing, you have deadlines. And these are not simple books that you are putting out. So how do you deal with the stress of a deadline if, you know, you have a day or a week where the words aren't flowing like you'd like them to?
Badly. I cry. I this is a fun question to answer right now, because as I mentioned, I'm 8 months pregnant and I have a book that I'm supposedly turning in before this baby comes out of my body. So we'll see. No, I have always been very strict about my work days and treating my work as a job. Like, I have to be very rigid. I mentioned how I had to be very rigid when I had a day job, but actually when I left my day job, I actually got even more rigid about how I structure my days, because I felt like I have author friends who can just kind of like write whenever. And I would just go crazy if I did that. I would just be kind of like a little bit working all the time and not being really productive. And also never having time off. So I have very structured work days. I also now have a toddler and another child on the way, so I also have to be structured for that reason. So when you have a work day, you're like, you know, I've got, especially mine are relatively short, I've got 4.5 hours or 5 hours or whatever. You know, we've got to get 4,000 words out. I tend to just approach it with the way anyone approaches any job, which is just, you just got to get it out, even if it sucks.
Yeah, no, it's true. That's amazing. So I'm wondering, with the new book, where you outlined your bullet point process, can you, for people who are unfamiliar with the series, can you give us the bullet points of what you want readers of this book to experience?
Oh boy. Okay. So The Lion and the Deathless Dark is actually, it is my favorite in the series so far. You can pick it up if you have not read other books in the series, or if you've been continuing all along, there will be a lot of culminations, a lot of revelations and stuff like that. It is a very fast paced, action packed, enemies to lovers romance in a very brutal fantasy world. There is a lot of epic god slaying. There is a sassy talking sword who's one of my favorite characters I've ever written.
I love the sword. I love the sword.
I'm glad. I love her too. She's one of my favorites. There's a lot of catnip in there.
Can you give us a little bit of inspiration for people who are sitting on a big idea, whether it's creative or maybe it's a business, but they're afraid to start because maybe they're afraid it's going to flop or it's not going to work. What's one piece of advice you could give them to challenge them to actually jump in and start?
Oh, it's the hardest part. I mean, the overwhelming number of new writers who come to me and say like, oh, I'm starting a book or I'm working on my first book. Like, overwhelmingly, the problem they have is that they just work on their first book forever, you know, or they work on their first chapter forever. And I think that is the number one pitfall of a new writer. Like, you talk to a lot of authors and they'll say, oh, it took me 5 years to write my first book. And now I write a book in like, you know, 90 days or 6 months or whatever. Because just learning how to finish something is a skill all its own. So that's why I always tell people a book is 1,000 words 100 times. You know, like, don't just keep rehashing that first 1,000 words. Because first of all, you're going to have to change it later. Just push forward, and it's going to feel uncomfortable. One thing I told myself, and people look at me like I'm nuts sometimes when I say this to them, because not everyone finds this as comforting as I do. But I had a revelation when I was writing my first book, which was, if I do everything right, this should be the worst book I ever write. And that was very freeing to me. Some people do not find it freeing. For me, I found it very comforting.
That's awesome. Well, yeah, permission to just do it, get it into the world, and if it fails, it fails, and move on. That's fantastic advice. So what do you say we move into the speed round of our show here? We always start by asking, what is a habit that you are happy to have and one that you wish you could ditch?
I'll tell you right now, the one I wish I could ditch, and I'm working on it, I'm trying very hard, is probably everyone says this, right? Like social media, like phone, like using my phone. That is my thing I wish I could quit. Absolutely. One that I'm happy I have. I'm a little obsessive, and I think that has served me well in my career. So I'll keep that one.
That is a good, I was going to ask too, like, you've got so many characters and so much stuff's going on. Like, do you have like maps and crazy diagrams on your walls to remember what's happening in your world?
I wish I did. I am very disorganized. I'm a little bit of a scatterbrained person. So I've had to, especially this series is 8 books long total.
Yeah.
I've had to force myself to adapt some type A, you know, personality traits just to keep things straight.
Yeah, that's great. I guess it's a long-winded way of asking, who's your favorite fantasy hero and who is your favorite fantasy villain?
In the TV series Arcane, which was like an animated League of Legends like thing, it's incredibly good, really, really good. There's a villain in that show, Silco, and I thought he was like one of the most compelling villains that I had ever seen in media. Like, he was just fascinating to me.
Wow. Okay. Very cool. And then finally, can you recommend a nonfiction and a fiction book that you feel would be inspiring or empowering or somethinging to entrepreneurs listening to this show right now?
Ooh, okay. Nonfiction. This is probably not the first time this book has been mentioned on this show. I recently read Deep Work by Cal Newport, I believe. Yes. Is this his name? Thank you for confirming for me. I'm saying it very slowly because I was not completely sure if I had it right. And I thought it was great. I really like, because like I said, I'm trying to ditch some of my, you know, time-wasting habits. So I found it very helpful. And then in a storytelling capacity, like for folks who are interested in storytelling, this is not a book. This is actually a podcast episode. There is an episode of the podcast Script Notes, which is a screenwriting podcast, but it applies to like storytelling stuff too. And it's called How to Write a Movie. And you can find it. They posted it on YouTube. And it's just like the best. It is the best hour on just how to tell a story, like how to structure a story that I have ever read. And I've read lots of books about writing. So I have two nonfictions for you.
That's awesome. Wow. I'm definitely going to check that out. And then finally, is there anything that you do to, when you sit down to write, is there anything you do or say or music or something to put yourself in the headspace, or do you just sit down and go?
Oh boy. I draft exclusively on writing devices that are not my laptop. Like, I don't write on my computer. I write on devices that can do nothing but draft. So I have a few of them. There's one called like a BYOK, which is just like a little screen and you like connect your keyboard to it. There's the Alpha Smart, which any millennial who is my age might remember from school, like, you know, 20 years ago. But these are all devices that don't do anything. That's it. They're just word processors. So that's my, I can't draft without them.
That's excellent. Great. Well, the book is out August 4th. It's available for pre-order as you're hearing this, but then it'll be on shelves very soon. So Carissa, so great talking to you, and congratulations again on the book and the baby.
Oh, thank you so much. I have a book baby and a human baby. So thank you. I had so much fun chatting with you. Thanks for having me.